I've always hated when I've been interviewed by churches to possibly consider being their pastor. It's always interesting because the conversation's always revolving around things like, well, what are your areas of strength? You know, what do you feel passionate about? What are ministries that you have done and led that are really, really good? And it's always funny because at the end of the interview process, they usually have a time where they say, well, Pastor, do you have any questions for us? And I say, actually, I do have several questions for you. I do this all the time. I feel it's my duty to kind of mess with people every now and then. And so I'll say, and usually they're prepared for it. Usually they're prepared because I'm supposed to then ask things like, well, tell me about the strengths of the church. You know, what is the church doing? You know, how is it reaching into the community? You know, how strong is the youth program? And you know, what is good about your church? And they're usually ready with a big list of, here's all the places that we're doing really well. But I never ask that question. I never ask, what are you guys doing good at? I always ask, so, what are the weaknesses of the church? Where are you guys failing at? And it's always funny because there's a pause, and they never know quite what to say. Because it's the same pause that I have. When someone asks me, so Mark, what are your weaknesses as a pastor? What are your failures? What are your weaknesses? Do you want a list? Yeah, yeah. Now, some of you keep lists handy and ready so that when I need this, you're quick to give it to me. Now, it's tough because there is a way that I can share my weaknesses but have them be strengths, right? We're good at this. For instance, if I, you know, if a church asks me, so what are your weaknesses? One of the weaknesses I could say is sometimes I end up working too much. Isn't that a great weakness? Because it is a weakness. You know, I sometimes, especially around the busy seasons of Christmas and Easter, I spend a lot of time at the church, and I'm always trying to balance work time and social time and family time and all that stuff. But if I say, yeah, sometimes I work a little bit too much, how are they going to take that one? Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I say, I sometimes can become a little bit of a control freak. I really sometimes like to make decisions and make them quickly, and I like to make sure that things are running well, and I sometimes don't involve other people. Again, isn't that a great weakness? It's really not a weakness. It's really me disguising my weakness as a strength. Humble brag. We're great at humble bragging. Well, what are your problems? Well, sometimes I preach a little too long. You know, I have so much to say. That's amazing. Well, that's a humble brag. This is how we, like if I asked you, well, tell me about your weaknesses, are you going to quickly come out with all the things that you do wrong? Probably not. Because we have believed something in this society that is really, really ingrained in us. Being weak is not good. No one likes to be weak. We know that sometimes it happens. I think we can cognitively attest that we're all going to be at times weak, but we're never really good about letting other people know that we're weak. Ladies, I think you do a much better job of this. Men, we are the worst at this. When a guy comes up to me and he starts telling me some of the things going on in his life and he shares his weaknesses, I know that things must be pretty bad. Because only when things are really, 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 really bad do guys open up to other guys. And usually when I talk to them, I say, have you told anyone about this? They usually say no. Maybe their wife, but mostly it's something they're going to share with me and me only because they don't want anyone else to know that they are weak. We hate weakness. For this sermon today, I'm going to give you one very important point, which is actually a part of a dual message. In this section, Paul gives us a truth, and then he gives us the reason behind the truth next week. He is actually building up for almost two full chapters, culminating near the end of chapter 12. About why it's important. So if you really want the rest of the story, please come back next week or else you're going to not really understand how it all ends. And I'm going to stick to it. I'm not going to try and give anything beyond this. But here's the truth. It's okay to be weak. That's the truth. It's tough for Christians, right? Because Christians don't want to appear weak. I often like it when I ask people, have there ever been a time in your life that maybe you doubted God? Of course, then there's usually a quick couple people, oh, no, I've never really doubted. And I'm like, oh, really? Humble brag. That's nice. That's good. Good for you. You're not quite ready to open up because I have not met anyone that is actually that way. It is really, really tough. Life is difficult. Faith is challenging. And sometimes we doubt. It's okay to be weak. I hear it again as people wonder as they come to church, as they look around. And I've mentioned this before. Everyone around me, their life seems to be all together. Everything's good. Yeah. We know that's a bold-faced lie, but we can't say that. We do this even when we greet people, right? Hey, Mike, how's it going? What's your standard answer?
Great,
fabulous. I think we should start freaking people out. Well, no, I'm a little depressed today. Well, I'm struggling a little bit with finances, and I'm having a trust issue with God right now, and he and I are duking it out on a nightly basis. And then people be like, oh, that's nice, thank you. I'll turn around and walk quickly away. Because not only do we not like showing weakness, we have no idea how to deal with weak people. Paul is going on this thing because he's battling people who want him to list out all of his criteria for being a pastoral leader. Paul, what makes you great? And I love it because Paul decides to go ahead and, in his words, act a fool and say, well, asking for stuff like this, I'll tell you, and again, I'm telling you this stuff, not because God thinks this is the right answer, but because apparently I can't get very far with you until I do this, and so I'm gonna give you these things. So this is how he starts it off. Chapter 11, I'm at verse 16. I repeat, let no one take me for a fool, but if you do, then receive me just as you would a fool, so that I may do a little boasting. Now listen how he phrases this. In this self-confident boasting, I am not talking as the Lord would, but as a fool. So this isn't godly. It's not appropriate for me to talk about how strong I am. I know that there are times and places when we look to someone as a mentor, or we look to someone who has strong faith because it's inspirational and helps us to overcome things that maybe we're battling in our life. But that was never really a thing by God. God's not saying, hey, go around and make sure you let the world know how strong you are. I think, again, this is where the problems of the church really lie, is we go around trying to show everyone how awesome we are, and none of us are actually awesome. All of us have problems. It's okay to be weak. So he's going to lay this out. I'm going to be a fool for a little while. So I'm boasting. I'm not talking as God would, but verse 18, since many are boasting in the way the world does, well, I guess I too will boast. I mean, you gladly put up with fools since you are so wise. In fact, you're even put up with anyone who enslaves you or exploits you or takes advantage of you or pushes himself forward or slaps you in the face. To my shame, I admit that we were too weak for that. So these people are coming along. And they're enslaving you. And worse than that, they're actually becoming abusive. And again, this is a good blanket statement to make. If you ever end up in a church, in a relationship, in anything like that where there's abusiveness going on, it's never, ever, 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 ever acceptable. We hear of churches doing that completely and utterly wrong in every possible way, shape, or form. Churches are never to be abusive. Husbands are never to be abusive. Wives are never to be abusive. Kids are never to be abusive. It's never about being abusive. That is just wrong. And he's saying, look, these people are coming in and they're pushing you around and they're bullying you spiritually. And there even is a hint that it's actually physical in that. I mean, I've heard stories of this. I've heard stories of priests abusing little kids. I've heard stories of how people psychologically force themselves on others and end up becoming abusive in the words that they say. And then, if that doesn't work, it's easy to become physically abusive because then, at that point, there's another fear tactic, especially if we start adding some wonderful Christian language to it. Spare the rod, spoil the child. So I need to teach you how to be humble. So as Jesus says, when I strike you on the right cheek, give me your left as well. So Bob, come here. Yeah. People, this actually happens. This is real life. Don't ever, ever, ever accept it. Paul is trying to point out, look, these people who are so strong, they're wrong. You shouldn't be following that. He then goes on, what anyone dares to boast about, I am speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast about. So he's going to start boasting. And again, he's so hesitant. Like, I don't really know if I should. This isn't really godly. I'm speaking as a fool. But okay, you want to know my credentials. Here's my credentials. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? Ah, so am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? And I love this parenthesis because it's totally true. Paul is really having a struggle as he's writing this. Listen to what he says. I'm out of my mind to talk like this. Are they servants of Christ? I am more. I have worked much harder. And then he starts going on this interesting rant. Because what we would expect with someone who's boasting about all the great things is, well, Paul, let's list it. Well, let's see. I've planted this many churches. I've raised up this many converts. I've saved this many people's lives. I've talked about the preaching of the gospel in all of these different scenarios. I've ministered to men. I've ministered to women. I've ministered to Jew. I've ministered to Gentile. That's what you're expecting. And Paul takes this sharp right turn. And he starts boasting about his weaknesses. Why does he do that? Because it's okay to be weak. And he starts listing this stuff. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. Isn't that a great thing to brag about? Yeah, people hate me. People want me dead. Why is he talking like this? Because it's okay to be weak. It says, 5 times I've received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. If you don't know what that means, they as they would flog people, they would whip them 40 times, but since people who were in the business of flogging, soldiers, strong guys, they're usually known for their brawn, not their brains, and it can get a little bit difficult counting as you're beating someone and blood splattering all over the place, and they're screaming and yelling, and you can't seem to keep the count straight. So you would always give them 39, because if you messed up and did 39 and maybe added an extra one, then you're 40 and you're okay, because if you give anything more than 40, then you have to be beaten as many times. So they were like, okay, we'll just back it down, and we'll call it the 39 lashings, and that's what they did. And Paul's saying that happened to him how many times? Five times. I've been beaten to the point of death. My bowels eviscerated. My body bearing the marks and the scars because people hate me. And do you think that as he was getting beaten, as he was getting flogged, do you think he was thinking to himself, this is good. This is good to be righteous. It's good to take this pain because I'm doing it for Jesus. Does anyone here, when bad stuff happens to you, is that your first thought in life? No, usually my first thought in life is, what the heck did I do to deserve this? Why am I in so much pain? Why do people hate my guts so much? But Paul starts bragging about his weaknesses. Why? Because it's okay to be weak. It serves a purpose. What is that purpose? That's the message for next week. Remember, that's what's going to happen when we finish up chapter 12, because he keeps talking about it. But let's keep going on this list. Five times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. How do you like that? What does that mean? Those would be nice cane poles. Those are great because especially if they're got some, they would sometimes slice them to make the edges a little bit sharper. So then when I hit you and beat you, it would open you up real quick. So it's more like getting a massive, gigantic paper cut every single time you got hit. Now, how many times would you be beaten with the rod? Oh, there's no limit. You can be beaten as much as you want. How many times that happened to him? Three times. He's been stoned. He came out of the 70s. Do you know what it means to be stoned? I mean, again, it's really, really hard to kind of get this in our brain. It's not little tiny pebbles. It's not little skipping stones. It's not even rocks about this big. I'm talking, these are big, gigantic bowls. You would get someone, and often you would have them in a pit because then they're easier to hit. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. They're down there. You just take rocks, and you just start throwing them against their head. Don't throw it against their head too early because then they're going to get knocked out. If they get knocked out, then they're just going to lay there limp. So the better thing to do is, you know, throw it first at their kneecap, shatter it. Well, now they can't climb as much. Now it's easier to aim. Okay, now bust up their shoulder. All right, now put one right in their gut. Don't crush their lungs too quickly. That might kill them too fast. And they'd take turns as they would just sit there and destroy someone. Paul was stoned. Do you think as he was lying there, was he going, "This is good. This is good. I'm doing this for God. I'm doing this for Jesus." No, he's probably struggling. Can't breathe very well, shattered bones. He somehow survives. After he survived all of these things, do you think that he walked really well? Do you think he breathed really well? Do you think he had then maybe chronic migraine headaches after that? No. And he would say, "It's okay. It's okay to be weak." This is the reason why we talked about Paul being bow-legged. Might be simply because he has bones that are not quite healing correctly. He might have eye issues because of something that smashed his head. Can't help him out with the unibrow. That one's just bad genetics. He was also then, three times I was shipwrecked. It's hard for us because we have all these rules, all these. But, you know, every now and then something happens in the news and we go, oh, like that fire on the ship that just happened up in Port Hueneme area. I mean, can you imagine you're sleeping and all of a sudden there's a fire? It's in the dead of night and your ship is sinking. They didn't have big, gigantic lifeboats. They didn't have any Coast Guard for Paul. Three times shipwrecked. That's why it is going to be interesting as we go to Malta to visit Jacob. That's one of the places where he shipwrecked in the book of Acts, was in Malta. He also said, I spent a night and a day in the open sea. How would have that been? Oh my gosh. I have been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, danger in the country, danger in the sea, danger from false brothers. He says, my life has been terrible. I personally don't know if I really want to meet Paul. Hey, Paul, how's it going? oh, let me tell you about this scar I received. And, oh, there was this other time that these people hated me. And I would go into town and they would want me dead. And I would go to my own countrymen and they'd want me dead. And then I'd go to people who were outside of my religion and they would want me dead. Everyone wanted me dead. My life stinks. Do you think Paul struggled with things like depression, anxiety? Do you think he struggled with things like PTSD? I have a different view on his thorn, but I will get to that in chapter 12. I'll tell you what I think his thorn is, because I think there was a movie that portrayed it pretty well. But that very well could be. He says, I've labored, verse 27, and toiled, and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst, and have gone without food. I've been cold. I've been naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak? And I do not feel weak. Who is led into sin and do not inwardly burn? Isn't that great? He's like, oh, do you want to talk about weakness? Yeah. I'm the one that struggles the most with weakness. Do you want to talk about sin? Paul says, I struggle with it all. If I will boast, I'm going to boast that shows my weaknesses. And then he gives this interesting story, and we don't have a lot of evidence of exactly what happened, but I think we can take some pretty educated guesses. He says, in Damascus, the governor under King Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me, but I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. Now, there's only one time that we know of where the whole Damascus story happened. It was a road to Damascus, and that was when he became converted. He was going to Damascus in order to kill people because he was one that would actually, he would actually hold people's robes. Like, oh, hey, oh, George, you want to participate in the stoning of this person? Well, it's a little hard when you got the robe on because, you know, you want full range of motion when you bash their brains in. So, yeah, just put it right here in front of me and I'll be the keeper of the robes. That was Paul. That's what he did as a living. And he'd go around and he'd find people. Oh, you believe in this new Jesus Christ, huh? Well, all right, you're dead. We're going to be killing you later. Oh, do you know anyone that's, oh, your husband. Okay, you didn't follow that stupid Jesus. Okay, well, you're safe. Thank you for turning over your husband. He's now dead. Husbands turned in their wives. Wives turned in their husbands. Parents turned in their children. Children turned in their parents. And people died. And Paul was going to Damascus in order to do this. And then all of a sudden, he has this encounter with Jesus. Life radically transformed. He now is no longer following Satan. He's now following Jesus. Now, you got to imagine, what do you think the guy, the head of the city, he's sitting around waiting for this guy, Saul, to show up. But Saul kind of sneaks into town. He finds a guy. He's been told in this vision. He's now blinded. He can't really see very well, so he's stumbling around. I'm sure as he's walking in, people are like, is that Saul? Yeah, it kind of looks like his Facebook profile, but I'm not quite sure. This guy's blind. Like, I don't know what his issue is. That's not Saul. Saul gets in there, and he finds his guy, and then he turns around and becomes a believer, and somehow we believe that what happened was word got out. This guy is now saved. He's now following the very thing he was here to kill. So you know what we need to do? Let's kill him. Who here has been ever in danger of life? This is where Saul finds himself, and he gets lowered over the side of the wall in a basket. Do you want to talk about humiliation? That's huge humiliation. Paul talks about his weaknesses because this is the truth. It's okay to be weak. September is Suicide Prevention Month. Specific day, September 10th, Suicide Prevention Day. It was really sad because on September 9th, there was a pastor. His name was Jared Wilson, pastor at Harvest Crusade. He's one of the pastors under Greg Laurie. Do you want to know what he did as a pastor there at the Harvest? He did counseling suicidal people. Because he was very open and honest. He would tell people, I struggle with suicidal thoughts. And every time someone big in the church would end up committing suicide, he was there to somehow minister to the people left behind, and he would share with them. It was incredible. And he was constantly, constantly sharing with others the hope of Jesus Christ. But on September 9th, what is this? Not that long ago, he ended his life. He succumbed to his depression, his suicidal thoughts, and he took his own life. And what's really interesting is so far, as best I can tell, people have been pretty, we have come a long way with this. In the past, it would be, wow, he's so weak. He actually did it? Did he just not have enough faith and trust that God would see him through? And as we learn more and more about mental health, we realize just how many people struggle with this. I think I want to get it. I've been seeing it on Facebook a couple of times. Friends of mine have been posting up. It says, it's okay to have Jesus and a therapist too. We have gotten to this point where we just don't like weak people. Well, gosh, I'm sorry you're struggling with depression. Maybe you should pray more. Isn't that a great answer? Because really what that's doing is heaping more guilt on them. Oh, you're struggling with stuff? Well, just have more faith. Well, how about this? Why don't you go seek some counseling? Why don't you go talk to someone? What everyone is saying nowadays is the most important thing we should be doing is talking about it. That if someone is struggling, the best thing to do is not try to keep it a secret. It's to get some help for that. If you came in and you have busted up your arm, do I just look at you and say, well, gosh, you should pray about that? I mean, wait, is it possible? Can God instantly heal broken arms? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. I have full and complete faith he could do that. Does God choose to do that all the time? No. He also sometimes gives us things to help us talk about it. Are you embarrassed when you go to the doctor? Doctor, yeah, I'm really sorry. I broke my arm. Really ashamed of it. So sad that I... No! You walk in, you're like, I got a broken arm. He's like, okay, what'd you do? Well, I was playing football when I shouldn't have, and someone tackled me, and I broke my arm. Oh, all right. Okay. Well, what do we do? Well, let's put a cast on it. Let's give you some pain meds. Let's get you through this. What's the worst thing you could do? Well, just do nothing. Same thing with mental health. Same thing with suicidal thoughts. It's very interesting how I'm all, I love God. He always gives me stuff at times when I'm not expecting it to come. You know, here I am preparing this message, and once a month I get together with other local area pastors and theologians, and we all sit in my backyard and we hang out and talk, and it's a fun little event. And it was funny because this past time, almost everyone bailed on me. Almost everyone didn't show up. You know, people were like, oh, hey, I'll be there. Oh, wait, something came up, can't come. Oh, hey, I was going to come, but then my kid did this and I can't come. Or, oh, my wife's out of town, I can't come. Oh, okay. And it came down that there was only two people. Two people showed up. And it was really interesting because they're like, well, hey, are you still going to hold it even though there's only these two guys coming? I'm like, hey, I'm always getting, like, sometimes I need a time to unwind and just relax. And so I said, I'm still holding it. So we got there and we started talking. And one of I don't know how we got into this discussion of mental health and suicide. I think it was because of Jared Wilson, pastor who took his own life. And one guy looked at me. He's a pastor. And he looked at me and he says, did you ever read my post? And I go, no offense, man, but you like post a lot of stuff on Facebook. Like, which post are you referencing? Because, you know, I get on Facebook to keep up with people's lives, but I don't get in too much. He's like, oh, here, let me pull it up for you. So he pulled it up on his phone and I start reading it. And after I read it, I go, holy cow. This guy is telling everyone how weak he is. He's boasting about his weaknesses. As I'm reading through this, I'm like, really, this is true? And he's like, yeah. I said, I'm talking about this on Sunday. Can I share it with my church on Sunday? He said, yeah, absolutely. It's out in the public domain. My profile is out there, so anyone could go and look at it if you want to. Because you know one of the hardest things that I've ever had to deal with in my life as a pastor is when I'm not doing well, I still have to get up here and share stuff with you and pretend everything's okay. But then you realize pretending everything okay is okay is stupid. It's better to just say, I'm struggling, I'm hurting, I'm in pain, I don't feel good, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I'm concerned about finances, I'm struggling with sin. It's hard for pastors because why? You're not supposed to show your weaknesses. But here's Paul, the quintessential pastor, and what he's doing. He's saying it's okay to be weak. So this is what he wrote. He wrote this on September 11th. This is yesterday, September 10th, was World Suicide Prevention Day. Local pastor. Guy I've known for a while. I woke up this morning with a heavy heart, both because today is September 11th and because I was thinking about my family and friends who ended their lives by suicide. As a result, I wrote the following. He recounts May 4th, 2019. That was almost the day on my tombstone marking where my life ended. That was the day I sat on the back porch thinking of all the things I was dealing with in life and feeling like I just wanted to escape. That was the day I felt like being gone would have been better than being there. That was the day my loneliness was so palatable, I could taste it as well as feel it. That was the day that the lies that I so often believe about myself, I'm no good, I'm a failure, I'm not of value, combined with the anxiety that I so often struggle with, became so loud, all I wanted to do was make both of them stop. That was the day I almost threw a rope over the rafter in my garage, slipped my neck through the knotted loop, and jumped. That was the day I almost left without saying goodbye. We chit-chatted about this a little bit afterwards. I said, what happened? He says, well, two things. First of all, I'm lazy. And I have to go and find the rope to make sure I string it over properly. It just seemed like a lot of work. But he said, then I wondered who was going to find me. He said, my wife was gone for the evening, and I have two kids, both adopted, and I think that they would have found me first. He said, that's what stopped me that day. He said, rather, I made a conscious choice to do the thing that I had been taught was a sign of weakness. I asked for help. It is okay to be weak. It's okay to say you don't have your life together. It's okay to say you struggle. No one will judge you. I promise you, I will not. The worst thing to do is just keep it quiet. He said, I spent the next 5 weeks in counseling, and I took 1 month sabbatical where I spent 2 weeks in intensive counseling, opening up old wounds, confronting the lies, and asking Jesus to begin the process of healing me. I learned the beauty and healing power of taking time during the day to just sit in silence. I learned that asking for help is actually a sign of strength rather than weakness. It takes a strong person to say they're weak. By saying you're weak, you're not admitting failure and defeat. You're gearing up for the fight. You're not weak, you're strong. I was reminded that I am loved and of value to God even when I don't feel like I deserve to be. I was reminded that I am never alone. I would love to say that I'm cured and will never go back to that dark place again, but I'm sure that would be a lie, right? Oh, well, once you have Jesus, that's it. All thoughts of depression are gone. Oh, really? Is that how that works? So when I struggle with sin, all of a sudden I'm now with Jesus and I have no temptation towards sin anymore? Lie. Oh, you mean I have an anger problem, and now that once I turn my life over to Jesus, now I'm released from all that anger? No, that's a lie. You mean when I'm depressed, but I know of the hope that Jesus gives to me, I'm somehow no longer depressed anymore? No, that's a lie. This is what you're going to struggle with. However, I began to learn how to stand strong when the darkness surrounds me and the importance of reaching out and asking for help when those times hit. Why post this? Yesterday was National Suicide Awareness Day, and I'm tired of losing friends and family members to the lie that ending it all is the only way out. I'm tired of reading headlines about pastors and ministry workers who felt like the things they wrestled with were just too much to endure. I'm tired of the shame that mental illness carries, like it's some plague that we have to silently endure on our own. Well, today I'm stepping out and letting you know that I sometimes struggle too. Friends, you are not alone. You are loved. You are of value. And asking for help is not a sign of weakness. Just ask for help. He gave me a very interesting thing, which, a great metaphor, and I thought about it again. Here, God's giving me material. This is just this past Friday that I'm hanging out with him, and it's been rolling around in my head because he talked about how he has friends. Also, this struggle with any. Don't raise your hand. Do you struggle with anxiety? It's embarrassing to be anxious, huh? It's embarrassing to be depressed. And he was talking about it. He said, you know, I learned something that I thought was really, really helpful. And I go, what was that? He said, sometimes you want to just like look at the anxiety head on and just like stare it down and like box it and fight it. And the only thing that happens at the end of the day is the anxiousness and the depression often win. And I said, okay, so what do you do? He said, someone taught me this. When I'm anxious or I'm depressed, I go and give it a hug. What? He goes, I embrace it. Because you know what happens when I come up and I embrace the anxiety and the depression? I just look over its shoulder, and that's where I see Jesus. It's hard to see Jesus when all you're doing is fighting that. The better thing is to say, this is what I struggle with. So I'm going to embrace it, because then I get to see Jesus. Friends, it's okay to be weak. There have been many times in my life that I've been weak, and I have some of the greatest friends around, some of the members of this own congregation. People have helped me through a ton of stuff in my life, and it's always amazing to watch. I'm here to tell you that I too am weak. I too struggle with sin. I too struggle with things of value, failure. I too do stuff and go, why did I end up doing that? I sometimes look around and say, other pastors are better than me. They're better speakers. They're better leaders. They're better people all around. They care more. They love more. And we're always in this game of trying to just show how strong we are. Maybe today is the day that you say, I am weak, and it's okay. It serves a purpose. You'll read it in chapter 12 when we gather next week. Next week, we're going to keep with the refrain, it's okay to be weak, and I'm going to give the second part of it, of how that means for you. If you are one that struggles, reach out. If you are a guy who struggles, please reach out, because you are fooling yourself if you think you're just strong enough to handle it on your own. You're not, and it's okay, because I'm not, and I've reached out many a times. I've gone to counseling. I've struggled with pain and depression. I get anxious. I struggle with sin. It's okay to be weak because you know what? I know another fact. God still loves me. You are not impressing him by showing him your faith muscles. In fact, he likes it when we're honest, as his children to say, God, I am weak. Do you love me still? And he says, do I still love you? I died for you, will always be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. So the next time you battle with sin, the next time you battle with depression, the next time you battle with anxiety, embrace that you are a sinner. Embrace that you are anxious. Embrace that you are depressed. Because then look over its shoulder and see that I'm there showing you how much I love you. Let's pray. Father, for all the people who struggle